for a second, so that I can remind you. I think this is a timely time to remind you of this. You've seen what our team has done with this story. If you have a story, send it to the Nolan Show, because we promise we will investigate on your behalf. 7 days ago, I told you on air, we were beginning the investigation. Team in this programme, they have camped out in BBC Northern Ireland for the last 7 days, trying to bring you as many facts as possible, as much information as possible, so that you can decide what should happen next in Northern Ireland. Right, Sammy Wilson from the DUP with us this morning. Morning to you, Sammy.
Good morning, Stephen. I hope that anybody who rings into you with a story in future, you don't distort it and be as selective as you've been on this one, using hearsay and everything else. But I'm sure we'll get into some of those issues as we do. And I wouldn't be tapping myself too much on the back as to the thoroughness of your investigation, nor indeed the thoroughness of your interrogation of your chief witness in all of this, because I think you've done a fairly poor job on it. But we'll see how this interview goes now.
Well, thank you for the compliment. Arlene Foster has apologised for not putting in cost controls. Why do you think those cost controls were not put into a system? She was saying, with the benefit of hindsight, that they should have been. Don't you think that you put cost controls in and protections for public money in case something happens?
Well, first of all, the scheme, when it was launched, the devising of the scheme would have been reflecting what it was believed was required to get people to take it up in Northern Ireland. When the scheme was devised, and I presume the papers were put to her, there were no alarms raised. When it was examined by the Assembly Committee, there were no flaws seen in it, nor indeed did they see any issues with the costs. And indeed, it didn't appear to be generous at the very start, because it couldn't even get people to sign up to it. It became apparent later on. And here's the important thing. Once it did become apparent, first of all, the minister who was then Jonathan Bell, was informed by his civil servants. He was given a brief as to what action he might take. He sat on that all over the summer for 3 months. And then he took action. When Arlene Foster, who is First Minister, first became aware that the costs were going to be overrunning, she immediately moved to get Jonathan to close the scheme down. So, I mean, I think that she did everything that she could. But I know, as a minister, all you can do when somebody brings a paper to you is to read that paper thoroughly. If there are flaws or if there are weaknesses identified, then it's up to you to make a judgment as to whether or not you run the risk. It would appear that none of that was drawn to her attention.
But Sammy, that's the point, isn't it? That word is pertinent. Judgment. The judgment of our First Minister that there should not be any protections in the scheme, so that if too many people did go onto the scheme and it cost us the hundreds of millions of pounds that we're now committed to spending unless we can get back out of it again... Where was her judgment to say, hold on a second, what's going on here? There's no cap on this. Why didn't she put a cap in?
Well, with all policies, when you introduce the policy, sometimes you will allocate a certain amount of money to it. Since this was going to be an ongoing scheme, and I would know this as finance minister, since this would be an ongoing scheme, you would be looking at the budget on a yearly basis, because it would be unknown what the uptake would be or what the cost would be. But you would keep monitoring the costs on a yearly basis as budgets came along.
But as I said last night on the television, there were suggestions in 2013 and 14 to put in a two-tier scheme. And it didn't happen. Arlene Foster's saying it didn't happen because she wasn't told. Is it not her responsibility to set up a department so that she is being told?
Well, there are lots of things which come across a minister's desk where the detail of the scheme is worked out by those who deal with it on a day-to-day basis. A minister can only respond to the detail which is put in front of them and should ask questions on the detail of that. And when no issues were flagged up, she wouldn't have had anything to question officials about. The important thing is when officials did identify there was going to be a cost overrun and that the scheme was overly generous, then there was an immediate paper to the then minister, not to Arlene Foster, who did not respond. And I suspect that a lot of what Jonathan Bell said to you last night, Stephen, was more based on the fact that he was embarrassed as to why it took him 3 months to respond when the issue was actually identified to him. And I think that's where you should have been targeting your questioning rather than talking.
I think it did.
Well, I don't think it did, Stephen, because in fact...
Well, we're about to hear the interview that I did with Mr. Bell in a second, so you can everybody can work it out for themselves.
Well, let's just see what he said in response to that. He said in response to it that he didn't...
So I did ask him then.
You asked him about
right.
it, and then when he gave an explanation that he was stopped by from taking any action by SPADs, by advisors, you didn't probe him on that at all. In fact, you know, first of all, the word advisor should have given it away. They are an advisor. Secondly, you know well enough, because you've interrogated me on a number of occasions when I didn't only ignore the advice of my advisors. I went against sometimes the views of my own fellow ministers and ministers in the executive, because you know as well as I do from your own experience as an interviewer that ministers are the people who make the final decisions, and if they make decisions that people don't like, then they sit in front of you and get questions asked from them.
There is a deep public anger, no matter what way this shakes down, Sammy, that this money coming out of the public purse is unacceptable. Does your party not get that?
And Stephen, I do. And, you know, actually, I don't want to appear to be more insightful than other people, but don't forget, I have been on your programme on a number of occasions as one of the few people in the Assembly who ever challenged the way in which we have bowed down to this green guff and have given huge subsidies to renewable electricity, which has led to higher costs in Northern Ireland for electricity. But there was a consensus in the Assembly that this idea of having renewable energy as our main source was the right thing to do. And in fact, you look at what happened in the Assembly. Even when Arlene Foster decided that the scheme had to be closed down, even when the Minister made it quite clear it had to be closed down because of the cost of it and the cost overruns, what did most of the people who are now criticising Arlene Foster do? They voted to keep it going on because they were so enamoured with all this green nonsense.
What was, in fact, the Alliance leader, Naomi Long, with us today. Maybe you want to speak to Sammy this morning. You can both speak to each other, Naomi. Go ahead. Morning to you.
Good morning. Well, I mean, I think what Sammy calls green guff is actually peer-reviewed scientific evidence for a start. And so it's very difficult to take seriously someone who was the Minister for Environment at one stage and couldn't actually have acted on the advice given to him by civil servants because he doesn't believe in the scientific evidence.
Well, this isn't
evidence.
An interview about Sammy Wilson's views, is it?
No, it isn't, but he brings it up constantly. And the reality is that the issue here is not that renewable heating is the problem. The issue is that the scheme was poorly designed, and the issue is that it wasn't properly dealt with when that came to light.
And Stephen, the very fact that Naomi has said and has admitted that when I was Environment Minister, I took a certain view on some of these environmental issues, which was at odds with probably what my advisor believed, what the executive believed.
I think
just in the interest of time, we should talk about this story.
No, I agree, Stephen. I absolutely agree that that's what we should do. And I think the fact that Sammy is raising this issue about green guff is another attempt by the DUP to obfuscate on the issue.
Okay, let me focus this.
The reality is that
hold on, both of you. I want to give Sammy a chance to respond, and then we are focusing, Mr. Wilson.
Right. And the point which I'm making is that I, as a minister, was able to make a decision independently. I was not, I couldn't be browbeaten by advisors. I couldn't even be reined in sometimes by what the policy of the executive was. And yet Johnny Bell has told you last night, and you didn't challenge him on it, that somehow or other advisors came in and overruled him.
I don't know what interview you watched last night. Jonathan Bell, after my question, said it was collective responsibility within the party. And he also talks about OFM, DFM being a higher force in the... That's not his exact words. What he meant was that they are more powerful. It's coming from that office.
Well, and if you'd picked up any inconsistency, if OFM, DFM were a higher force, on one hand, he said that in June... He gave in to special advisers who came and told him, you can't do this. And yet, when he was faced with this higher force, the First Minister...
Wasn't June, it was September.
He couldn't do it. What did he do in February? He had a row with her.
Okay, Naomi Long.
He stood up to her and he resisted her. And you didn't even ask him for that inconsistency. Because, Stephen, I'll tell you for why. You had already made your mind up what the story was.
Rubbish.
And was he a pussycat in June and a lion in February? Because that's what he was going to be, and yet you never challenged him on those two different stances. Was he subject to advisers and not subject to the view of the First
Naomi
Minister?
Long.
Stephen, the bottom line in all of this is not the defence of either Jonathan Bell or Arlene Foster. It is the defence of the integrity of the institutions themselves at this point. Both of the interviews last night were both internally inconsistent and also in conflict with each other. And they are in conflict with previous statements that have been made by the DUP on the issue. So, I mean, there is absolutely no clarity that has been brought to this, but huge questions have been raised as a result of the work that you have done in terms of probing into this issue and asking the questions you asked. I think at this stage, the only option that we have, and it should not be something that is of concern to Sammy Wilson and his colleagues, if they believe that they acted appropriately at every stage, then why not simply have a judge-led independent inquiry into the issue.
And Sinn Féin and Sammy Wilson have said they will support that.
And
will
have
you?
A forensic examination of the email trail so that we are absolutely clear about allegations of email tampering and changes, that we're absolutely clear on all of this.
Okay.
Well,
let's be careful. We're not saying tampering. That's not a word that we have used. Sammy Wilson, because I need to focus this. Hold on. Sinn Féin have said they will support a public inquiry. If the DUP wants everything in the public domain, will you support a public inquiry, Sammy?
Well, first of all, you don't need a public inquiry to have everything in the public
domain. Is that a
no? Let me answer the question, Stephen. You don't need a public inquiry to have everything in the public domain, because every document which is involved in which has been involved in this particular scheme can be found by freedom of information, can be demanded by the Public Accounts Committee, and can be made available.
Or could be released by the First Minister.
So first of all,
or could be released voluntarily by the First Minister, something which we called for her to do a week ago.
That something happens that you have a public inquiry, which never tends to throw much more light on the issues than an inquiry by the Public Accounts Committee would do anyway.
Okay.
And thirdly, what criteria then do you have?
Well, this is absolutely crucial.
I need to focus this again.
Is Naomi Long saying that just because this happens to be a Sinn Féin department...
This is crucial.
Okay, hold on. So the Alliance Party want the public inquiry, Sinn Féin want the public inquiry, the DUP don't. They're saying that this can come through the Public Accounts Committee. I've heard you, so let's move on. Arlene Foster characterises Jonathan Bell, something which he emphatically denies, that he was aggressive, that other women within the DUP would have seen that aggressive nature. She talks about the huge bulk of Jonathan Bell, the physicality of him, standing over him, and an individual having to tell him to step back. These are quite extraordinary words from a First Minister. Imagine the Prime Minister talking about this in England, for goodness sake. Now, here's the question, Sammy. Why, with that knowledge, did Arlene Foster... If that is true, again, something Mr. Bell denies, why did she allow him to stay in the party? And in what way was she protecting other women from the man she characterised like that?
Well, I mean, first of all, she didn't appoint him again as a minister because she recognised some of the flaws that there were there. Secondly, I mean, I've worked with Jonathan Bell for a long time, and I know he can be aggressive. People accuse me, of course, of being aggressive as well. Some people have different character traits. But, I mean, the one thing that I think the point she was making was last night, Jonathan was presenting himself as some kind of docile creature who could be kicked around by special advisors, when all of us know that actually he can be quite aggressive, is quite capable of standing up for himself, and indeed claimed on your programme that when he did have the opportunity to face the First Minister, he did stand up for himself, even though he was trying to make it out that at an earlier stage he was some poor wee minister who couldn't resist the pressures from
Naomi
Long. Advisors.
Go on, Naomi.
Well, I mean, the bottom line here is that the allegations that have been made against Jonathan Bell were made last night. If the DUP leader was aware of such allegations prior to this, then she has a duty of care to her fellow colleagues in the party to deal with that in a way that would actually have prevented that reoccurring. Now, I have no idea whether disciplinary action has ever been instituted against Jonathan Bell for any such behaviour. I certainly haven't heard those allegations. And I have to say, I agree with Sammy. We all at times are accused of being aggressive. I see it as robust. We have robust exchanges, but I don't feel intimidated by the people that I'm dealing with. That is a line that is crossed. When someone uses their physicality, when they use their presence to intimidate and make you feel uncomfortable, we all know where that line is. I've never felt that way in a debate with Sammy Wilson, and they've felt quite robust at times, but I've never felt intimidated.
Okay.
Now, if the First Minister is saying that's the case, bear in mind that Jonathan Bell also alleged bullying in his context, in that he said that if he spoke out, his career would be at an end. Now, in that context, how can the PAC, with four members of the DUP, an organisation which is now openly admitted to senior members, are saying there is bullying in the organisation, how could they possibly withstand the pressure that would be brought to bear on them?
Okay, Sammy Wilson, what's your message to Jonathan Bell this morning?
Well, my message to Jonathan is this. Jonathan, first of all, I wouldn't have invoked God in any dispute that I had with another person in the party. That's the first thing. I think the second thing is that is quite clear from the evidence which is available that you had an opportunity to fix this scheme in June. You know, the proposals were for you in July. You didn't take any action until September. You haven't given any explanation as to why you didn't take that. So just hold your hands up and say, look, I made a mistake. I should have done this. And I take the consequences. And stop trying to move the blame onto somebody else. And certainly don't demean yourself by saying that you're capable of being... You're appointed as a minister. You had the authority of a minister. And yet you allowed yourself to be pushed around by paid party employees.
Do you still have confidence in Arlene Foster?
I do. And I'll tell you why I have confidence in Arlene Foster. First of all, I believe that she has tried to get a grip on. She tried to get a grip on this issue once the problem became known to her, and she sought to push the thing then through the assembly to have the scheme closed down. And you know, even in the face, and this is an important thing, even in the face of opposition from Naomi's party, from the Ulster Unionists, from the TUV, from the SDLP, from the Green Party, when she recognised there was a problem, and even when she was being criticised for not having sufficient green credentials by closing this scheme down, she was still prepared to do
it.
Even though she had been the minister who initiated the scheme.
All right.
That, to me, shows leadership.
Okay.
And that's the kind of person you need to have in leadership.
Sammy Wilson, thank you. Naomi, always nice to talk to you too. Thank you very much indeed. BBC Spotlight has been in touch in regard to a segment of last night's interview with Arlene Foster. She disputed how she replied to questions put to her by Spotlight ahead of their special programme on RHI last week. That's how this whole story kicked off. Spotlight have informed us a crucial question to her, which she failed to answer, was: what did the whistleblower tell you when she first contacted you? Arlene Foster didn't answer this. Instead, she sent the answer we mentioned last night. That answer was, in 2013, a whistleblower made allegations to me about the operation of the RHI scheme. I passed these concerns on to departmental officials to investigate. During the PAC evidence session on the 9th of November, the Permanent Secretary indicated that as Minister, my actions in response to the whistleblower were entirely appropriate. It is now obvious that these investigations should have highlighted the failings of the scheme and ameliorative actions should have been taken. Spotlight did not have the 2013 email to her from the whistleblower. She had it. They did not suggest they did have it. They asked the questions based on what had been said by Andrew McCormick in the committee hearings and the whistleblower's email of 2014. Arlene Foster had the opportunity, when she received their right of reply, to say she had not been made aware of the allegations. Instead, she said the opposite.